It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
The Commission recommends, even if you are just receiving payments, benefits or payments for your medical expenses, to go ahead and file a claim, presuming that you want it to be covered under the Workers' Compensation Act. The voluntary payment of medical expenses or wage benefits does not stop time limitations, which may run with regard to your right to file a claim, and it does not protect you with regard to a continuation of your benefits in the future.
Virginia Workers' Compensation Commissioner Wes Marshall discusses obtaining and keeping workers' compensation and how to protect your right to benefits under Virginia law if you're injured on the job. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how Bank of America hasn't modified any mortgages under the national mortgage settlement that it agreed to in February, signed in March, and entered as an order as of April 4, 2012. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 180, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. What do Virginia Delegate Manoli Lupasi, ACLU of Virginia Executive Director Claire Gastaniaga, and Virginia Assistant Attorney General Dave Irvin all have in common? They've all appeared on WRIR within the past 6 months on this show. No other radio station in Richmond can make that claim. No other radio station offers WRIR's variety of underrepresented news, views, and music. If you like what you hear and want to continue hearing it, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. And now, this week's news you can use. Bank of America hasn't completed any first mortgage modifications that reduce loan balances for borrowers so far under a $25 billion national mortgage settlement reached this year, the official monitoring the agreement said last month. Five banks, JPMorgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, Ally Financial, and Bank of America, that are part of the settlement have provided $10.5 billion in consumer relief from March 1 to June 30th, with $8.7 billion in the form of short sales, in which customers sell their homes for less than the mortgage's value. Bank of America produced $4.8 billion in short sales, the most of the five banks, according to their first report by settlement monitor Joseph Smith. The five lenders reached the agreement in March with federal officials and 49 state attorneys general to resolve allegations they mishandled foreclosures. The settlement requires them to provide about $20 billion in consumer relief by reducing loan balances for struggling borrowers and refinancing loans for customers whose homes are worth less than the value of their mortgage. While the banks have provided more than $10 billion in relief, they are not necessarily halfway to meeting their obligations, since the settlement only provides for partial credit for certain kinds of relief. For example, the banks receive only 45 cents credit for every dollar for a write-down for a short sale. The agreement required Bank of America, which bought subprime lender Countrywide Financial in 2008, to provide the most consumer relief, But in a securities filing in August, it said a significant number of modifications had not yet been completed, quote, due to the time required to underwrite the modified loans, unquote. Bank of America, so far, has provided no relief through refinancings, according to the report. It has completed about $54.2 million in second mortgage modifications. Bank of America has offered about $2 billion in trial offers and has about $803 million in trial offers in progress, according to the report. Smith, the former North Carolina State Banking Commissioner, is charged with monitoring the progress of the banks under the settlement. The first report shows the bank's progress from March 1 to June 30th. For more information, go to http://foreclosurefraud, that's the numeral 4, C-L-O-S-U-R-E, fraud.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is repossession. Repossession is when a creditor takes back property you are buying, such as a motor vehicle. A creditor may not repossess unless you're more than 10 days late with a payment. A creditor does not have to give you any notice before a repossession and may do so any hour of the day or night. However, a creditor may repossess only if that can be done without a breach of the peace. If you object to a repossession in any manner, the creditor must leave. Unless there is a court order, you have not committed a crime if you refuse to allow a repossession. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and repossession is this week's legal term of the week.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Legal education is legal empowerment and an essential part of the struggle for fairness, equality, and justice. Since 2005, WRIR has made programs like the Legal Aid Radio Show possible so you can hear what nobody else will broadcast. Whether it's unrepresented news, views, or music, WRIR is the only outlet for cultural diversity in Richmond, and you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. We're here at the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission, and we are talking with Commissioner Wes Marshall, who was recently appointed to the Virginia Workers' Compensation by the Virginia General Assembly this past spring. And we're going to be talking about getting and keeping workers' compensation. Welcome to the show, Commissioner.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Now, would you tell our listeners briefly what is covered by workers' compensation?
Workers' compensation is a comprehensive program to deal with workplace accidents and occupational diseases. There are a number of statutory definitions and even some definitions that are developed through the case law about what is and isn't covered. At its most basic, in Virginia, we cover injuries by accident, which is defined for legal purposes as a sudden mechanical or structural change in the body occurring at a reasonably definite time. It's a long way of saying something that happens pretty much in an isolated period of time during work and subject to some other requirements. Occupational diseases are all quite a bit more difficult to define very well, but there are a series of tests that are set forth in the law that have to be met, and that mainly means medical evidence that you have contracted a disease and it is due to a workplace exposure.
So let's assume a worker is injured on the job or learns that he or she has a work-related disease. What is the first thing the worker should do?
Provide notice to the employer We actually have a mandatory requirement in Virginia for a 30-day notification to the employer for an accident. Our statute actually says that it should be a written notice from the employee to the employer stating what was injured, how you were injured, when it occurred. In all reality, actual notice, whether it's in writing or not, is going to be sufficient as long as it meets those time requirements. For occupational diseases, again, they are more infrequent, but you're supposed to provide notification to the employer of the communication of an occupational disease. In most cases, that means a doctor has told you that you have a disease which is or could be caused by a workplace exposure.
Now, I understand that most of these claims, whether for injuries or for diseases, are in fact resolved by agreement between the worker and the employer or its insurance carrier. Would you lead us through that process and tell us how that happens?
Virginia is what's called a forms state, and there are various levels of agreement that people might encounter. If someone gets hurt on the job and informs their employer, they may hear from either an administrator for workers' compensation from the employer or from a private insurance company. Most employers have private insurance companies that provide the mandatory workers' compensation coverage. Very often, the insurance company or the administrator will accept the claim and begin to provide wage benefits, medical benefits, or both. That is an informal acceptance. If indeed they've accepted the claim, they are supposed to complete some written agreements, which they send to the injured worker. He signs and dates those, usually returns them to the insurance company with instructions for them to sign them and then file them with the commission. This informal agreement among the parties then gets turned by the Workers' Compensation Commission here into an actual award of benefits, which is the equivalent of a court order requiring the employer and its insurance company to pay the benefits they've agreed to pay under the law.
And would you tell our audience exactly what type of benefits are available under the Workers' Compensation Act?
Workers' compensation law in Virginia, as in many states, really represented a compromise that came out at the turn of the century. Employers got the benefit of defined benefits that they had to pay for workplace accidents. They could predict the cost of workplace accidents as part of their cost of doing business. Employees gave up the right to go before a jury of their peers and have a trial to determine the compensation that they should get for an accident. So in this compromise, there are limited benefits that are available under our workers' compensation law. The wage benefits primarily fall into three types. One is called temporary total disability, which is for a person who is out of work altogether, and either they are totally disabled by their doctor or they are partially disabled by their doctor. They could not do their pre-injury work. If they're out of work altogether, they are entitled to a wage benefit equivalent to two-thirds of their wages that they made at the time that they got hurt. There is a category of benefit called temporary partial disability, which is a partial wage loss benefit. That usually comes up in the situation where a worker has returned with some restrictions in light-duty capacity, and he's entitled to a differential, two-thirds of the difference between what he made at the time he got hurt and what he makes in a lower-paying light-duty job. In Virginia, we also have scheduled loss payments, or what we call permanent partial disability. There's a portion of our statute that says if, as a result of a work accident, you suffer a permanent loss or loss of use to a part of the body that is actually listed in the workers' compensation law, that you're entitled to a fixed amount of compensation just for that permanent loss. You aren't entitled to that until essentially your medical treatment has completed and you are at what is referred to as maximum medical improvement. The doctors say you're as good as you're going to get with regard to this injury, but you have some rateable residual problem.
What about these medical benefits that are associated with a claim?
The workers' compensation law provides that a claimant is entitled to reasonable and necessary medical care for as long as necessary for that injury or accident. There are some limitations on where you can get medical treatment. The statute provides that your employer is supposed to give you a panel of three doctors. Once you select a doctor and begin a course of treatment, you are not at liberty to go and change your doctor without the approval of the employer or the Workers' Compensation Commission. But for the full course of the treatment that you need for your work accident, as long as it's reasonable, necessary, authorized, and related to the work accident, you are entitled to 100% payment for the medical care that you need.
Now, we discussed earlier the process of settling a claim between the worker and the employer or its insurance carrier. What if the employer or the insurance carrier essentially denies coverage? What's the process for getting that claim heard and decided by the commission?
We talked about the agreement process, and sometimes people don't really understand the difference between the role of their employer, the role of the insurer, and the role of the Workers' Compensation Commission in the process. There are many circumstances where employers or insurance carriers will voluntarily accept a claim and start paying benefits, but some of the paperwork, for one reason or another, doesn't get done. Sometimes the carriers and the employers deny the claim right from the beginning because they think it doesn't meet the definitions of what should be covered. And then there are times where they will pay some medical expenses for a while and then have a change of mind and say, no, we shouldn't have been covering this and we're not going to continue to cover it. In those circumstances, the Workers' Compensation Commission does have a claim form which injured workers can complete and file with our agency. We then act as an administrative court system for deciding disputed cases. The claim form is relatively user-friendly, and you can also use our web file system, which is an online computerized system, and file a claim online. Once you either file a claim by paper with the Workers' Compensation Commission or file a claim online, you would start to receive a series of notices, and the process then goes to, in many cases, to an evidentiary hearing, which is before a deputy commissioner, one of our hearing level judges. And from the decision of that judge, it can go on to a couple of different levels of appeal.
And let's assume that the employer or its carrier has accepted liability and begins to pay the wage replacement or the medical benefits or both. Is it necessary for the worker to file a claim with the commission anyway?
The commission recommends, even if you are just receiving payments, benefits or payments for your medical expenses, to go ahead and file a claim, presuming that you want it to be covered under the Workers' Compensation Act. The voluntary payment of medical expenses or wage benefits does not stop time limitations, which may run with regard to your right to file a claim, and it does not protect you with regard to a continuation of your benefits in the future.
I gather there are ways that benefits can be lost by a worker who is now getting them. Could you tell us what those ways are and what workers would do if they're threatened with loss of their benefits?
If an employer or insurer, for instance, stops paying wage benefits or says we're no longer going to pay for medical expenses, the procedural status of the case sort of dictates what an injured worker might want to do. If there is an award in place, that is one of our orders that says that the case was accepted as compensable, then the employer is actually required to file an application for hearing in the case of wage benefits to stop them. If there's an award in place for medical benefits and the carrier or the employer gets to the point where they say we're not going to pay any more medical expenses, then the claimant can file an application for hearing seeking a continuation of his medical benefits. There are certain circumstances where an employer will file an application for hearing to terminate wage benefits, and there are things that the law requires claimants to do, so it gives employers relief if the claimant doesn't do that.
And what are the things that the claimant is required to do in order to keep their benefits?
We talked about medical benefits. It's a requirement for claimants to follow up and to obtain reasonable and necessary medical care. So if an injured worker unreasonably refuses necessary medical care, the employer has a right under our law to cease the payment of benefits. If an injured worker is out of work and the employer offers vocational rehabilitation assistance, tries to help the injured worker find another job, if the injured worker unreasonably fails to cooperate with those vocational rehabilitation benefits, the employer has a right to suspend or terminate the payment of compensation. Those are probably the two examples where this occurs most often. If a physician releases the claimant to go back to his pre-injury job, if he is no longer disabled, or if he was disabled due to a completely unrelated condition, those are some other circumstances where ongoing wage benefits might be suspended.
And I've heard of circumstances where employers will offer injured workers lighter duty that they could be able to do even if they can't do their pre-injury work. What's the law on that? What does the worker have to do in that situation, and can the worker face loss of benefits because they feel they can't do the light duty job?
As a general principle, if an employer offers or procures light duty work for an injured worker and it's within his physical capacity, he's required to accept it and to do the work until and unless he gets medical proof that he's not able to continue to do that. The unjustified refusal of appropriate light duty employment is a basis for an employer to suspend payment of compensation.
We have been talking with Workers' Compensation Commissioner Wes Marshall at the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission about getting and keeping your workers' compensation benefits. Thank you so much, Commissioner Marshall.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Remember when radio used to be real people spinning real records? Remember when news and talk programs used to be insightful and relevant? We at WRIR do too. WRIR DJs hand-select the music they play each week. WRIR also features locally produced news and talk covering local, national, and international stories. We are Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. And you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org. Thank you.
This week's top three tips are about the motor vehicle lemon law. The first tip is that the lemon law applies only to vehicles you bought new or bought used with the original warranty. You have lemon law rights for 18 months after the vehicle is delivered to you. The second tip is that you have lemon law rights if a problem affecting the drivability, use, value, or safety of your vehicle can't be fixed after three tries, or a serious life-threatening problem can't be fixed after one try, or your vehicle is out of service for a total of 30 days unless it couldn't be fixed due to things beyond the dealer's control. The third tip is that you must enforce your lemon law rights, either by using the manufacturer's informal procedure or by filing a lawsuit within 18 months after your vehicle is delivered to you. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral for, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. New do-it-yourself uncontested divorce rules, whistleblower protections, consumer arbitration. You won't be informed about this anywhere other than on this radio station, WRIR. If you want to continue hearing law you need to know to avoid getting ripped off, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. If you want to end your rental housing lease early, it's not as easy as you think. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, private attorney Charles Adams, describes the perils and pitfalls of ending your lease early, as well as the few ways to do so legally, in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on February 16, 2011. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbring.